Well, good morning and welcome to the Local Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studio. This morning, I have the pleasure of having with me, probably one of the smarter guys I've ever met, John Mackin. John represents the NASA Solar System. He's a NASA Solar System Ambassador. It's NASA, not NASA. NASA Solar System Ambassador. Yes. And we're kind of excited to have you in here. You know, I noticed when the limousine showed up and let you off, I was really impressed. You're somebody now. John, welcome. What do you got to say for yourself? Anything this morning? How was the ride?
It's a nice ride. 1 hour up from Belleville, Illinois. So I've never been this far north before.
Yes. So you do live in Belleville. Just down the road, and I understand that you used to be a science teacher. You taught chemistry?
Yeah, I taught for over 20 years, both chemistry and aerospace engineering at Kirkwood High School in Kirkwood, Missouri. And prior to that, in the first phase of my...
Yes, go ahead.
In the first phase of my life career, I did food product development for companies like Ralston Purina and Nestle. And decided I wanted to make a change and maybe make a bigger difference. So I went into teaching and took that experience with me, which the kids appreciated.
Yeah, fantastic. So, and then you retired a few years ago?
Yeah, it's almost been 6 years now since I retired from teaching. And when I was getting ready to retire, I read a lot about retirement and how things change. And one of the things I read was that you should take any opportunity that comes along after retirement and try it, because you can always step away from it if it doesn't fit. So about 3 or 4 months after I retired, I saw a notice on Facebook for NASA Solar System Ambassadors. And I've always been a big NASA fan. I was a young boy when we landed on the moon the first time, and that was pretty exciting.
Yeah, it was really very exciting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you are a family man.
I am, yes.
And married with children?
Married with two boys in their 30s.
Got some grandchildren, too?
Two grandchildren last year. So they're in Houston and San Diego, so we fly back and forth to see them a couple times a year.
Now, I'll let the listeners know, I met John at the library. I took my nephew, Tate, to the library to hear you speak on the upcoming eclipse, which is pretty cool. A 97% eclipse in our area, 100%. What is it, south of us? Southeast?
Southeast of us, yeah.
Yeah, southeast of us. But before we get to the eclipse part, how about you talking a little bit about some of the things that NASA has had going on in the past and things that are going on in the future? And tell me a little bit about the International Space Station.
So the International Space Station has been in orbit for 25 years. It's been continuously occupied for 23 by astronauts from many different countries. There's about 26 countries that have worked together to build this. And it's about the size of a football field.
Yeah, and they live on it and do their everyday. How many people are living on that thing?
So anywhere from 3 to 12 people have been there at a time, and they're doing research on humans in space, because you're in a low-gravity environment, and that changes the way your body operates. And if we want to travel to places like the moon and to Mars, we need to really understand how people do in space with that environment. They also do a lot of research for different companies and for universities. One of the coolest things I read about a couple of weeks ago was Keytruda, which is a cancer drug. It used to be given by IV infusion, and so the company sent the drug to the International Space Station and were able to grow a different type of crystal in low gravity.
Yeah.
And they brought that information back, and now that drug is available as a pill. So you can take it as a pill because of the research that was done on the International Space Station.
I'll be darned. So this International Space Station, all these different nations went together to get this thing built, or what? Tell me about it.
They did. It's Russia and the United States are the two largest, but Canada supplied the remote arms that are outside the space station, and a lot of other countries supplied different components that went into it over time. So,
How'd they get the thing up in orbit? Piece by piece?
It was done piece by piece. And if you remember back when we had the shuttle was kind of like the space truck that took those different pieces up. And then astronauts would do spacewalks to connect all the different pieces together.
Wow, that is crazy. I guess if a person wanted to kind of educate them more about the space station, they could go online and there'll be like pictures and videos, et cetera, about it.
Yeah, NASA has a lot of information there, pictures. If you've never seen the Northern Lights, the aurora from space, there are pictures there. It's just amazing, some of the things you can see.
Fantastic. Now, we'll get down to some basic question, like how many planets orbit the sun?
Well, when I grew up, it was 9, but officially now it's 8 because Pluto was... changed to not planetary status anymore. It's too small.
Okay.
One of the reasons. It doesn't clear its orbit of debris is one of the big reasons that it was demoted, if you want to think of it
clear that way. Clear is orbit of debris. Explain that to me.
So most planets are large enough that if something is in their orbit, it can cause them to move out of that orbit. But Pluto's too small to do that. It doesn't seem to be typical of the rest of the planets.
Okay. And so there are 8 planets now. Any chance of adding any other planets? Or are we done?
There's talk off and on about some gravitational influences on the outer planets that may result from some other body out there. But people are looking for it. They've been looking for it for decades. But if it's there, it's very small and hard to see. So... I don't think we're going to see a big change in our lifetime, probably.
And now we hear a lot about satellites in the atmosphere, and like our satellite dishes. There's something up there signaling down to us. I guess going from Earth to the satellite dish, and then back down on the other side continuously all the time. Explain that, satellite dishes, how they work.
Well, there's really 2 different orbits we use for that. The one that allows us to cover specific areas of the Earth are geostationary satellites. They're far enough away from the Earth that as they go around the Earth, they stay above a single location. So those are used for a lot of satellite TV so that you always have coverage when you want to go and get your program.
Yeah.
And then there are lower orbits that are used for satellites like communication and GPS. So your cell phone, definitely, if you're calling long distance, it's bouncing from the Earth up to a satellite back down again. A lot of times people joke, you know, if you and I were standing next to each other and I called you, is it going from tower to tower on Earth? Is it actually going up to space and back down? It's going to take the path that's available. Mm-hmm. So who knows? Maybe we're bouncing a satellite off a signal off a satellite to talk to each other, and we're only a few feet apart. So.
Yeah, really, in a short amount of time, using satellite and being able to communicate is just simply amazing. Really, when you think about when we were kids, you know, a long distance phone call was a big deal. You know, and now we can do it just a little computer in our pocket, talk to anybody.
It is amazing. I know when I was growing up, I was born in Philadelphia, so we moved to this area when I was 7. And my parents would call about once a year. And that was probably a $100 phone call back then. And it was short. You didn't stay on very long. So,
How many pieces of equipment are up in space, circling?
Well, there's thousands around our planet right now.
Thousands.
Both some that are no longer working and they stay there because there's nothing to bring them back, as well as all the functional ones. So you may hear about SpaceX launching satellites all the time now. They're building a network around the Earth so we can communicate with everybody everywhere. And there's concern that we may have too many satellites in space, and that's going to block access. So there was a gentleman in 1968 named Kessler who said this could happen, and people just kind of laughed back then. But now we have companies that are looking at how to remove that space debris in many different ways. Catch it with a net, bring it lower into the atmosphere so that it burns up, other things like that. So we're entering a whole new era of technology related to removing satellites as we put more into space.
Wow. How many planets? We have 8 planets. And I don't know if it gets as much coverage, you know, as if it's that big a news anymore about us going to other planets. But give us a briefing on how many planets we have visited, what we know about planets.
So we have sent unmanned spacecraft to every planet and Pluto in our solar system. And there are things that you may use on a daily basis that come out of that, such as Google Earth. We think of that as, you know, we're able to see things on Earth. We have a satellite on the moon, at the moon, called the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, and one at Mars called the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. They've been there for years taking high-def pictures of both of those bodies. And if you go to Google Earth on a computer, there's a drop-down that lets you change it to Google Moon or Google Mars. And all those images are there. We're mapping those two bodies because we want to go there, first to the moon and stay there, learn how to live far away from the Earth, and then go to Mars and also hopefully live there at some time in the future. So
you actually think there's going to be people that live on the moon or at Mars? I think that's going to happen?
I believe that's going to happen. And I, you know, growing up with the moon landing when I was about 12 years old, I thought we'd be there by now.
Okay.
But, you know, politics gets in the way of some of that funding and things like that. But we're now heading back to the moon, and we want to stay with a new project called Artemis. Apollo was the one that we probably recommend, if you're old enough, landed there in the late 60s and 70s. And so we're going back now, and we want to get a permanent base there because we have to learn to live further away. The space station, you can get back and forth in about 4 hours. So if there's ever a medical emergency, somebody can get back pretty fast. The moon, 2 to 3 days. So we have to learn how to live further away and support ourselves. And Mars, a trip to Mars is 6 months one way.
Wow.
Yeah. So you have to be self-sufficient before you can ever go to Mars.
Yes. How many times have we been to the moon? I mean, human beings stepped on the moon. How many times?
So there were 6 missions, each with 2 astronauts who went down and walked on the moon. So 12 people have walked on the moon at this point.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there are people out there that believe that we never really made it to the moon. You know, that they're just that's just a show, fiction.
Yeah, it's that's interesting. There were tens of thousands of people involved in that program.
Yeah.
And to think that everybody's keeping a secret is kind of difficult. I have a little trouble with that.
But, yeah, I do too.
You know.
But it sold. You know, people were watching it, so I guess that's why. Now, we've got something coming up here in April, April 21st. Tell us what's
April 8th.
Oh, April 8th.
Yeah, early in April. So.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And we have an eclipse coming in. Tell us about the eclipse.
So we've got an eclipse coming up. And what's interesting about this eclipse is, of course, we remember there was one here 7 years ago. Typically, to have 2 eclipses that happen this close together is rare. It's usually about 370 years between eclipses at a single location on Earth.
Repeat, 370
years is the average.
Wow.
So we're in a very special location. So for me, a bucket list was to see an eclipse, and I might see 2 if it's not cloudy that day.
Now, how often do you say eclipses happened here 7 years ago and happened? But how often does an eclipse happen?
So there's a potential for an eclipse twice a year, depending upon the positions of the Earth, the Moon, and the Sun, but they don't always line up. So you don't always get one when the eclipse season, as they call it, is occurring. So there's usually one or two a year at different locations on the planet. They may not be full eclipses. They're, you know, often partial eclipses where the sun doesn't get completely blocked.
Tell us a little bit about what's going to happen that day and some things if you want to watch the eclipse, if you want to see it, what are some things to do?
So definitely the first thing you need to do is to protect your eyes, and that way you can enjoy the eclipse without having any eye damage. So you need some eclipse glasses. They can't be just sunglasses. They're not dark enough. And so eclipse glasses are available online at many different places, and they're very inexpensive, a couple of dollars a pair. So it's not worth the risk.
Get them from Amazon?
Amazon has them.
Okay.
As well as other places. Some local stores probably are carrying them, you know.
But so, number one thing, make sure you have the glasses on.
Right. All the time, because this is a 97% eclipse. So there's really no time the sun will be completely blocked by the moon. So you can always have damage to your eyes because of that. Even that little bit of brightness could cause some damage.
Okay. What else? Where's it going to be? I mean, where do we need to be? What time of day and all that good stuff?
So the peak is at 2 o'clock on April 8th, and it's about an hour and a half on either side of that that the sun will slowly be blocked away by the moon. If you want to see a 100% eclipse, probably the closest is Carlisle, maybe Illinois. So again, you can look that up online and see where the line of totality is, and you know, target an area if you want to try and get there and see it.
Wow. Thank you. Anything else you want to, any points you want to make before we wrap up this interview, John?
Well, I think there's not much, as you said, gets heard about NASA these days. I mean, we're kind of like getting used to being in space. It's kind of like SpaceX is launching rockets that are re-landing and they're reusing them, and it just becomes like everyday activity. So if you're curious about anything we talked about or any of the planets that we've been to, there are just amazing pictures and images. One of my favorites is New Horizon that went by Pluto. And if you've never seen what Pluto really looks like, you know, search New Horizons, NASA New Horizons images. It looks like a mountainous planet, but yet it's frozen nitrogen mountains, which is just amazing.
Oh, and that's great. Are you going to be speaking anywhere again soon? Or how, if anybody wanted to hear you speak on the solar system and NASA, or do you have a web page or a Facebook page or anything?
So Solar System Ambassadors, that I'm a volunteer with NASA for, has a webpage that lists every activity that's happening. There's about 1,100 ambassadors across the country. So people in different areas are giving different presentations all the time. I'm going to be giving one in Wood River at the library there on April 5th.
Okay.
Other than that, I'm available if somebody wants to call and we can set something up. I've done a tour of the solar system at a couple places where we go through the entire solar system and look at all the missions. So, and we design all our own as ambassadors. We design our own presentations based on the requests. So if someone would like to get in touch with me, that'd be great.
All right. So thank you, John Mackin, NASA Solar System Ambassador. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you.